Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A lot of people call this part of America flyover country, but where we are is pretty much the population center of these United States and has been for a while. That fact attracted one of our guests to take a closer look, photographer Nate Larson, who for several weeks now has been conducting what he calls his Centroid Project. He's with me in studio, but part of his story is where he's been living while working on that project. Also with us is Mike Bailey. He teaches art at the University of Missouri-St. Louis and is founder and director of Paul Art Space, a residency space for artists and writers. He also teaches art at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here, Don.
Yeah. Nate, welcome to St. Louis.
Well, thank you. It's been great being here.
Well, it's great having you, but I want to find out more about the Centroid Project. What exactly is it?
So the project is called Centroid Towns. I've been chipping away at it for about 3.5 years now. But in 2014, I had learned that Chestertown, Maryland was once the center of population in the year 1790. And I thought that was really an interesting thing. So I went out and the census gives a coordinate, and I showed up at this coordinate, which is on somebody's farm, and I looked at their hunting shed, and then all of a sudden this farmer came over on his John Deere four-wheeler to see what was going on. I was a little worried initially, and I said something like, I'm just here to see the population center. And he goes, oh, not another one of those. Uh-huh. Apparently lots of people will come to see it. But it got me curious about that coordinate, and eventually I visited all 23 of them that are spread out across the United States. The current one is near Plato, Missouri, so just a couple hours down the road from us in St. Louis.
And I think not too long ago, DeSoto, Missouri was a center, was it not?
Exactly. Yeah. DeSoto was the center in 1980, and in 1970, Muscoda, Illinois, just 35 miles up the road here, was the center.
So it shifts, but not by very much.
Yeah, they're projecting it's going to be in Hartville, which is just half an hour outside of Springfield, Missouri, and it looks like it's stabilized for the moment. It's only moved incrementally the last few censuses. But I'm curious with immigration, like this coordinate is determined by where people live in the U.S. Right. So I'm curious if California gets more immigration, if it'll keep tugging at west, or if Texas gets more immigration, it'll keep tugging at south. And those kinds of things.
What specifically are you looking for as you visit these places?
Well, initially I was interested in just the coordinate, and I made a set of pictures, but it was ultimately unsatisfying. Like I wanted to know more about the towns that are attached to that coordinates, and that's why the project became Centroid Towns as opposed to the Centroid. So when I show up at each city, I tend to go to the historical societies and the historical museums. I dig in the city archives or in the county archives, depending, on the nature of the town. I'm curious about the history of the town, how long it's been there, when it was incorporated. I'm also very curious about who lives there, so I've been conducting oral history interviews with local residents. I have about 27 hours of tape from this residency that I have to wade through. And I've also been making photographic portraits. So if people go to the website, which is centroidtowns.com, they can see some of the portraits of folks in both DeSoto and Muscoda, and then also Ellicott City, which is in Maryland, and the one that I've probably spent the most time with out of the 23.
We will put a link to that website on our website at stlpublicradio.org. But are you telling me there's a history museum in Plato, Missouri?
Well, Plato does not. I think the population there was 250-some people, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. That's off the top of my head, so don't... Don't quote me 100% on that, but it's very, very small. When I was in Plato, I was only there for a day last year, and I haven't had a chance to go back. But in Muscoda, they have about 7,500 people, and they have a heritage museum there. And the director of that museum has been really wonderful in sort of introducing me to folks in the community. And, we dug through a box of stuff from when it was the population center. They had parades. Apparently, a bureaucrat from Washington came and set up an office in town. And they made commemorative T-shirts and bean pots and little German figurines that says center of population on it. Kind of thing. So we dug through the history, but then even more important than the history to me is sort of understanding how that town has changed over time. So seeing what it is today, seeing how it's grown, over time. And Muscoda just completed a special census where they expect the population of the town to go up by 2,500 people. It was only 7,500 at the last census. And now they're expecting close to 10,000 people, and that's just in 7 years. So I'm curious, what does that kind of growth do to a community? Like, how does that community grow and change? How does its sense of self and identity, shift, as the population changes and as, families move in and move out?
Is that kind of growth likely to shift? I mean, the population figures, is it likely to move back east a little bit as a result of this sort of thing?
I mean, it's possible, right? Yeah. If, you know, say we had a lot of immigration in Florida or New York, it might tug it, you know, either a little bit south that way or a little bit north or a little bit back east or that kind of thing. So it's hard to know where it's going to end up. But in 2020, they're projecting Hartville, Missouri, which is, you know, still south and west of the current center, which is Plato, Missouri. So I guess we'll see what happens, you know, over time. But I think it factors into a lot of the national debates right now, you know, about immigration and, you know, the role of, you know, small town life and even thinking about some of these small towns in terms of economic development and some of those issues that were talked about during both this last campaign season, you know, and in the years prior to that, you know, thinking about things like, you know, maintaining Main Street businesses, you know, small business owners, you know, thinking about, you know, how this economic agenda going forward, you know, can support those kinds of communities.
It seems like it's always relatively small towns that has this distinction.
Yeah, that's been interesting, too. I live in Baltimore. Before that, I lived in Chicago. So I've been around, you know, cities for a while. But most of these towns are fairly small. The biggest one is, you know, near Baltimore in Ellicott City. And I kind of count it as part of the Baltimore metro area. And then DeSoto and Muskuta think of themselves as bedroom communities for St. Louis. And then there's one that's just across the river from the Cincinnati airport. So that would probably be the next, you know, biggest sort of urban area. But it's been really interesting, you know, sort of thinking about that that sort of urban-rural divide in America right now. I think that it infuses a lot of our sense of national identity and thinking about how different folks define themselves, you know, in relation to the country, whether they think about themselves as part of a city or whether they think about themselves as, you know, country folk or rural-identified folk kind of thing. So it's been interesting for me to sort of navigate those, you know, those pathways and talking to people and sort of getting a sense, you know, of where they are and how they think about themselves.
You've come to the right place if you're looking for examples of the rural-urban divide, because Missouri, very much a part of that, and we see it in our legislature where you have a large rural population and they're, you know, at it year in and year out because the interests are so very different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And photographing in Muskuta, I've been talking to people about the Illinois budget crisis right now, which seems to be very much a rural-urban, you know, divide. Sure. When I lived in Chicago, like downstate politics and Chicago politics were completely separate, you know, sorts of ideas or concerns or that kind of thing. And I see that playing out in the conversations I'm having with folks on the ground.
I want to get into more detail about those conversations, but let's bring Mike Bailey into the conversation because you're living at his place.
Indeed. It's been wonderful, too.
Really? Mike, tell us about that. This is a little different. I've not heard of a place like this in this area.
Sure, Don. Well, so Paul Art Space is located in Florissant, so it's a North County property. It's a place that was in my family for years. My uncle, Paul Bailey, who is the place is named after, passed on in 2011. And after his passing, we began talking about what was to become with the property. And the idea of some sort of an artist collective has always been very close in mind for me and my partner. And it was one of these situations where with Paul's passing, a door closed, but then others opened. And the place has, it's about 6 acres. It's a ranch-style house that can accommodate 3 residents per session. And they have private bedrooms and private studios. And then the rest of the space in the house is sort of communal space, which would create and lend itself to our residents getting to know one another, discussing concepts and ideas in their practices, and building network. And that at the core is a big part of what Paul Art Space is, and what we hope for it to be is to support artists and writers and curators, and to bring network to St. Louis, and to also send network out.
What kind of a variety of guests have you had?
So we've had curators. We've had curators that have come from outside the St. Louis area. We've had curators that have come from outside the United States. A couple of Irish curators that came and did studio visits with local St. Louis artists. We've had writers, writers that are local as well as from outside the area. We've had plenty of visual artists. I would say since we opened in the summer of 2013, we've hosted close to 60 residents now. And the residencies last anywhere from 1 month to 3 months.
Well, folks just don't drop in. They've got to.
That's right.
They've got to sign up somehow.
That's absolutely right. So there is an application process. We ask that they put together their resume or CV, a statement of purpose and their intent of what they would do while they're in residency, show examples of the project or examples of previous projects they've worked on. If they're a writer, give us samples of their writing. Mm-hmm. And then we have professionals within the area review, and we select who might be incoming residents based upon that process.
The best of the bunch, is that what you're looking for?
We're looking for diversity. Mm-hmm. We're looking for really engaging and thoughtful work. So when Nate's application came through and when he shared with us the Centroid project, Towns Project, it was fascinating because it really, speaks to, again, the idea that Paul Art Space is there to give time and space for folks to conduct their research. As a photographer, Nate looks very closely at us, and then he gives us something to look back at, sort of that whole notion of art functioning as a mirror in a way. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Nate, how has this worked for you?
It's been fantastic. In my initial proposal that Mike was talking about, I wrote about wanting to use Paul as a hub, as a jumping off point to be able to engage in these different communities in the area and to basically use it as a home base and have a studio that I could invite people to visit and that kind of thing. And it's been absolutely a wonderful experience. I'm so pleased it worked out to be able to be here.
What kind of accommodation? You mentioned a studio. What mm-hmm. else is available to you there aside from the 6 acres?
So the house has 3 bedrooms and 3 studio spaces. So each artist gets a private bedroom and a private studio space. And there's internet and, other basic amenities like running water and showers and, those kinds of things. I've certainly traveled on the road with less, but it's nice to, to have a home base that I can settle back in at the end of the night and sort of review the work that I did during the day and, log all my files in the computer and make sure, everything is on the up and up kind of thing.
Mike, you're an artist. Do you ever get involved in the projects that your guests are working on?
Well, so I get involved in certain ways. One of the things that we do in terms of trying to create opportunities for our residents that are there at Paul Art Space is exhibitions that come about as a result of the work they produce. So we've collaborated with other organizations in town that would host these exhibitions. I oftentimes, as I'm on faculty in the Department of Art and Design at UMSL, oftentimes residents will come in and engage with our students there. So I don't necessarily, walk around with Nate and tell him, hey, take that photograph, Nate. That's a good one. But we do engage in conversation, and I guess my involvement is in trying to help facilitate opportunities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to take a break. Let's do that now. We come back. I want to talk more specifically, Nate, about some of the things you've learned during this trek of yours. We'll do that in just a moment. I'm talking with Nate Larson, a photographer who is also involved in what he calls the Centroid Towns Project. Mike Bailey is founder and director of Paul Art Space. This is a residence for visiting artists. Back to continue the conversation in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Nate Larson and Mike Bailey. Nate, back to you. What are some of the things that you have been learning from the people that you've been interviewing and photographing?
Well, it's very interesting to sort of come as an outsider to a place. Like, I didn't know anybody in Muscoota, Illinois, for example, when I arrived. And one of the very first people I met was this woman named Marilyn Welch, who works at the Heritage Museum. And she wrote a book called Remembering Muscoota that's all about local histories and archiving oral histories. So the first time I met with her, we talked for almost 2 hours. And she was telling me a lot about the history of the town. She's the 6th generation of her family to live there. And now she has a great-granddaughter. So that would be the 9th generation of her family, to live in this small town. So there's a really different sense, of those sort of deep roots and that kind of thing. It's also been interesting in Muscoota with the proximity to the Air Force Base, Scott Air Force Base, mm-hmm. which is there. And their school system is quite large because it accommodates the children of the Air Force service members. So it's interesting to sort of see that contrast between military families that are maybe there for a shorter duration, and then folks like Marilyn that have been there, you know, for multi-generations, you know, of their family and sort of get their sense, you know, of the town. I've also talked to a number of other people that maybe served in the military and made a decision to stay after their service was up. So, for example, the mayor of Mesquita, Jerry, I sat down with him and we talked for a while, and he was a serviceman in the Air Force. And then when he retired, he decided to stay. And now he's been the mayor of the town for 17 years, which is really interesting.
What are you going to do with this information? Are you going to compile it somehow?
Yeah. So the website is the primary repository right now. I hope to publish a fuller, more comprehensive book in the future that would look at all 23 cities. And I'm still deciding what the structure of that would be, whether each city would be a chapter of the book or whether there's a way to sort of interweave these stories, you know, maybe around different thematic moments or that kind of thing. I'm also looking to do some smaller publications, what are referred to as artist books or zines. So I'll probably put out an artist book of just the work in Mesquita at some point later this year. And then I hope to put out another one of just the work in DeSoto later this year. And that way each city can sort of have a little volume repository of the photographs and some of the stories
that I've encountered. Are not solely portraits, if you will. I mean, they're individuals, but also I imagine you're taking pictures of the communities themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I came through Mesquita specifically about a year and a half ago for the first time, and I didn't know anybody there, so I did a lot of landscape work, you know, looking around the town, you know, so sort of urban landscape work, thinking about different monuments or different ways that cities present their public appearances. The portrait work has been made possible by the deeper dive and my time here at Paul Art Space, which I'm eternally grateful for. And then I also bought a drone, a small unmanned aircraft. That has a,
of course, everyone has to have a drone these days.
Well, the one I bought has a 20-megapixel camera, so it does a pretty good job. And I've been doing aerial photographs with it in the towns, too. My current favorite one is one taken in Mesquita last week, where you see the town cemetery, which is historic and goes all the way back to the inception of the town. And it's there's a dividing line, and then there's a subdivision of all new growth houses that are new within the last, you know, decade or so. And I love that contrast between new and old and sort of thinking about a sense of history versus thinking about the sense of growth, progress, change, development.
Is that available on your website?
It is. Okay, so well, if you go to centroidtowns.com and click the Mesquita tab, you can see that and many other photographs.
And you couldn't have done it without Mike, right?
I could not have done it without Mike. Mike was helping me test the drone at Paul Art Space. And I actually mapped the property at Paul Art Space with it, too. So there'll be a nice little digital archive.
Right, yeah. And they did capture some wonderful overheads of Paul Art Space and the grounds, you know, which is great for us to have for documenting ourselves.
I hope you didn't find out that your roof needs repair or anything.
No, fortunately, like that. That's one thing that we don't need work on. That was just replaced last year.
Nate, is there any way to connect the dots between these various towns that you've visited?
That's what I'm trying to figure out right now. It's sort of the $10 million question. I see a lot of common themes running through it, especially thinking about rural identity and also sort of some of the national policy issues. So one of the things that I'm looking at is the town of Carlisle, Indiana, and they have a prison there. The town itself only has, I think, 700-some people that live in it. The prison has about 2,200 inmates that are incarcerated, and the inmates are not counted as part of the census, which is interesting, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to connect some of these things with bigger national issues, you know, dealing with criminal justice reform and mass incarceration and those kinds of things that have felt especially pressing lately with this administration sort of leading the charge, you know, on that front. I'm also trying to look at other bigger national issues. So one of the other cities that I've been working with is Ellicott City, Maryland, and they had a large flood there last year that made the national news. I don't know if folks saw it, but I've been doing a lot of work in the aftermath of that flood. I've partnered with the neighborhood association there. And I've been looking at a lot of people that were affected by the flood. And then part of the reason for the flood was the loss of permeable ground cover due to development in the area.
Sure.
And I think that that's very much a national issue, too, as we think about sustainable communities and, you know, how to best move forward in terms of sustainable growth and development that, you know, doesn't have other environmental implications down the road.
In general, what do people have on their minds these days? What do they want to talk about?
Well, when I start the conversation, I ask them a lot about the city and their history with the city, like how far their family goes back. We also talk about what it was like when it was the population center in Mascoutah. A lot of folks were alive during that moment, so they remember that very clearly. And then I also ask them a lot about growth and change and how, you know, how the city's grown from there. Other topics of conversation include things like religion. I had a gentleman yesterday that asked me about my own faith journey, and we talked about that a little bit. And he gave me a little handmade cross that I guess when you rub it, your finger oils will stain it over time. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of it as almost like those fidget devices that seem to be popular these days. Right. Or we've talked about the current administration and the election.
I was going to ask if politics. Everybody seems to be talking politics these days. I imagine you've run into a lot of that.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I don't imagine it's much secret which way I vote. I don't claim objectivity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been interesting to sort of look at these cities. The other day, I got into a really interesting conversation with a woman in DeSoto, Missouri, and she was talking about how during the election season, this president promised health care for everybody, and she was, very adamant in holding him to that promise. And it gave me a little bit of hope, because this current bill moving through the Senate is not health care for everybody. Mm-hmm. And in fact, will probably remove a lot of folks from Medicaid, both immediately and then over time as they phase it out into a block grant thing that'll have less purchasing power over time.
More spirited conversations to come, no question about it. We're going to have to wrap this up now, gentlemen. I'm really happy to have met you, Nate, and congratulations on what you're doing, and best of luck as you continue this project. Sounds fascinating.
Thank you.
Mike Bailey, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about Paul Artspace.
It sounds fascinating. Happy to be here.
Great to see you both. Thank you so much. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.